Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 9, Texts 6 through 9. Being very angry and biting his reddish lips with his teeth, Krishna, with false tears in his eyes, broke the container of yogurt with a piece of stone. Then he entered a room and began to eat the freshly churned butter in a solitary place. Purport. It is natural that when a child becomes angry, he can begin crying with false tears in his eyes. So Krishna did this, and biting his reddish lips with his teeth, he broke the pot with a stone, entered a room, and began to eat the freshly churned butter. Om Gana Timidantasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Miditam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mayam Dadhati Shapadantikam Bande Hang Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalang Shri Kudun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Shavatutam Prajana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamstra He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshako Pitrubhyascha Kripa Sindhobhye Vacha Patita Nam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Just going to go on to the next verses. Mother Yashoda, after taking down the hot milk from the oven, returned to the churning spot, and when she saw that the container of yogurt was broken, and that Krishna was not present, she concluded that the breaking of the pot was the work of Krishna. Purport. Seeing the pot broken and Krishna not present, Yashoda definitely concluded that the breaking of the pot was the work of Krishna. There was no doubt about it. Krishna, at that time, was sitting on an upside-down wooden mortar for grinding spices, and was distributing milk preparations, such as yogurt and butter, to the monkeys, as he liked. Because of having stolen, he was looking all around with great anxiety, suspecting that he might be chastised by his mother. Mother Yashoda, upon seeing him, very cautiously approached him from behind. Purport. Mother Yashoda was able to trace Krishna by following his butter-smeared footprints. She saw that Krishna was stealing butter, and thus she smiled. Meanwhile, the crows also entered the room and came out in fear. Thus, Mother Yashoda found Krishna stealing butter and very anxiously looking here and there. There are many points here. Krishna, the propensity to steal is very strong. The cheating propensity. Prabhupada said it of these four propensities: propensity to make mistakes, to be illusioned, to have imperfect senses, and to cheat. Cheating propensity is very strong. So Krishna is not only a cheater but a thief, but his stealing is absolute. And he doesn't, and he goes right for the top, he steals butter. The butter is so valuable, butter, yogurt, milk products. And Krishna is emphasizing the value of these things by stealing them. But then he doesn't keep them for himself. He distributes also down to the monkeys. The stolen goods are being distributed. It seems the monkeys have no discrimination about, no qualms about accepting stolen goods. They're famous as being thieves themselves, especially in Vrindavan. And so, which is understood because they're connected with Krishna, so he's a thief, so they're following in his footsteps, stealing people's specks and all of that stuff. Anyway, Krishna was distributing to the monkeys. But because he was conscious that I've stolen, I've committed an offense, so he was fearful, looking here and there, whether Yashoda Mai is going to come and punish me. When Lord Sri Krishna saw his mother stick in hand, he very quickly got down from the top of the mortar and began to flee as if very much afraid. Although yogis try to capture him as Paramatma by meditation, desiring to enter into the effulgence of the Lord with great austerities and penances, they fail to reach him. But Mother Yashoda, thinking that same personality of Godhead, Krishna, to be her son, began following Krishna to catch him. Purport. Yogis, mystics, want to catch Krishna as Paramatma, and with great austerities and penances, they try to approach him, yet they cannot. Here we see, however, that Krishna is going to be caught by Yashoda and is running away in fear. This illustrates the difference between the bhakta and the yogi. Yogis cannot reach Krishna, but for pure devotees like Mother Yashoda, Krishna is already caught. Krishna was even afraid of Mother Yashoda's stick. This was mentioned by Queen Kunti in her prayers. Bhaya bhavanaya stitasya. Krishna is afraid of Mother Yashoda, and yogis are afraid of Krishna. Yogis try to reach Krishna by Jnana Yoga and other yogas, but fail. Yet although Mother Yashoda was a woman, Krishna was afraid of her, as clearly described in this verse. Gopyan anvatavan nayamapa yoginam kshamam praveshtum tapaseritam mana. In the Brahma Sangita, pantastu koti satavat sarasam pragamyo vayoratapi manaso munipungamana. So pyastiyat prapadasim navyachinchatatve govindamadi purusham tamahang bhajami. Krishna is achintya, inconceivable, adhokshaja, not reachable through the mind and the senses. And he's therefore beyond the reach of the mental speculators. And even the yogis can't reach Krishna in his form as the personality of Godhead. Yeah, cell phone check, please. If you haven't checked your cell phone, please do. Krishna is bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. Tato mam tatvato gyatva visute taranantaram. By devotional service, one can know Krishna and one can enter into the spiritual world of Krishna. The yogis, here it's interesting that Prabhupada mentions that they are trying to enter the effulgence of the Lord. They reach the part, they're after the meditating on the Paramatma, but they're not necessarily interested in serving the Paramatma. They meditate on the Paramatma, the ultimate truth in the form found within the heart. But so often their goal is find the Paramatma, merge with the Paramatma. It's like Microsoft. They had a policy that if there was some standard that threatened them, they would embrace it, extend it, and extinguish it. Famous predatory policy. Rather than oppose it, they would embrace it, make it their own, and then extinguish it, kill it. So the Paramatma Vadis often have a similar idea in mind, that we'll reach the Paramatma, we'll meditate on the Paramatma, we'll see the Paramatma. Dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pashanti. And then seeing the Paramatma, we'll merge with the Paramatma. Maybe they don't think of extinguishing the Paramatma, but they extinguish themselves. Or they extinguish the personal existence of both in their minds by becoming one with the Paramatma. They'll extinguish the distinction between themselves and the Paramatma. So even though they undergo great austerities, they discipline the mind impressively, they go through so much endeavor, and they even perhaps see the Paramatma, but then their goal is merge with the Paramatma. It doesn't have to be that way. They can see the Paramatma and become devoted to the Paramatma. That's also possible. But what Prabhupada mentions here is that they they try to capture him as Paramatma by meditation, desiring to enter into the effulgence of the Lord with great penances and austerities. They have some ulterior motive. They want to capture him and merge with him. But a devotee like Yashoda, although she's not a great yogi, undergoing austerities and penances, can capture the Lord because anya vilashita shunyam jnana karmadya navratam. She has no other motive than to serve the Lord. Bhakti doesn't mean to get something. That I'll devote myself, I'll undergo penances and austerities, and then I'll get something. That may also be bhakti, but it's mixed bhakti. Dhruva Maharaj also, he underwent penances and austerities to reach the Lord with some motive. So that wasn't counted as pure devotional service, and later he regretted it because the Lord fulfilled his desire. Then after getting the fulfillment of his desire, a great kingdom greater than his grandfather's, he was regretting, I was such a fool that I was praying for some worldly power and now I have to live with it. I have to stay in this material world and exercise the duties of a king for so many thousands of years. I could have prayed for pure devotional service, but instead I wanted a kingdom. Oh, how foolish I was. So it's also counted as devotional service, but mixed devotional service. But, of course, Dhruva Maharaj, regretting his impure motives, mixed motives, came to the point that I just want to serve. No, take the kingdom also. But his conclusion was pure devotional service. So Jashoda Mayi, from the very beginning, her motive is pure devotional service, to serve Krishna. And not even Krishna is God, let me serve him. But spontaneously, in the mood of a mother, to look after the child, to protect the child, to set the child straight. This is the natural mood. It's like the mother is here, so she's looking after the child, how the child is playing. And oh, now the child is making noise, I'd better take him out before Jai Dvaita Swami gets on his case. So, automatically, the mother is looking after the needs of the child. So, Yashoda Mayi, automatically, not that if Krishna is God, I'll serve him. If he's not God, I won't serve him. If he gives me this, I'll serve him. If he doesn't give me that, I won't serve him. Spontaneously. And Krishna is spontaneously reciprocating also, taking the role of a child. So he's creating mischief. Mischief is very endearing. If a child is mischievous, then it's we complain, but we like it. And he's afraid also. This Ashrumasha, the false tears, are commented on in different ways. One is that the child, sort of when he's prevented from getting what he wants, then he pouts and sort of works himself up into a fit of anger, how he's been unjustly treated, and so on and so on. Or another commentation is that false tears mean useless tears. That they were real tears. He was genuinely afraid because he was in the mood of the pastime. There's a whole discussion about this among actors and among actors, how to live the part. If you're just acting, then it's not so persuasive. But if you live the part, if you actually feel what the character is feeling and respond the way the character would naturally respond, then the acting is superb. So Krishna, if he's acting, he's superbly acting. Or from another point of view, he's simply spontaneously involved in the pastimes. As Yashoda Mayi is taking the role of the mother and tracking down the thief and so on, Krishna is spontaneously taking the role of the child who's about to be tracked down and punished by his mother. That's not just play acting, but spontaneously, by the influence of, by the agency of Yogamaya, his internal potency, he's absorbing himself in these pastimes and enjoying. He's enjoying, reciprocating in the same mood as, or in the complementary mood to, Mother Jashoda's devotion. Yeyatamam prapadyante, tamastatayava bhajamya. As one approaches, as the devotee approaches Krishna, or as anyone approaches Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. For the demons, he reciprocates in different ways. Very fortunate demons, he reciprocates by opposing them, attacking them, killing them. Ordinary demons, he reciprocates just by concealing himself from their vision and letting material nature deal with them. For the impersonalists, he absorbs them into his effulgence, and so on. For those who want to worship him as a king, he reciprocates as the supreme ruler. Then in Vrindavan, as a friend, as a child, as a lover, yayatamam prapanjante, as the devotee spontaneously desires to serve Krishna, Krishna spontaneously desires to reciprocate. So this all takes place within the realm of pure devotional service. The yogi, for the yogis, these things are inaccessible. Pantastukoti satavatsata. They may travel at mental speed for thousands of years. The mental speed is so quick that if you think of New York, you're in New York in a moment. The mind goes there. But if we traveled at that speed, for just like they have the all these lunar expeditions and then Mars, now they're talking about Mars and beyond Mars. But one issue is how many years it takes to get to Mars. So by the time you get back, you know, either you're an old man or everybody on Earth is an old man. All the people that were young men when you left, they're old men when you get back. Your family has died because so many years to get there. But here, mental speed. If NASA could get this technology, they could reach Mars within a second. Just travel at the speed of the mind. The yogis can do that. They can travel wherever they wish within the universe by mental speed. They can, what is that? By mystic siddhi, prapti siddhi, they can extend their senses to any place and take anything they want from anywhere within the universe. So this is all by perfection of mental discipline. NASA doesn't seem very keen on the perfection of mental discipline. They want to do everything grossly by machines. But even if they were to perfect the technology and discipline their minds, they wouldn't be able to reach the tip of the toe of Govinda, because he's not accessible by material means. The mind, after all, is matter. We're trying to find out everything by our mind and intelligence. The mind is matter, the intellect is matter. The expansions of material energy of the Lord, subtle material energy. So matter on its own can't reach the spiritual platform. Therefore, sevan mukhehi jivado svayameva spratyada. Krishna is seeable, reachable, when he reveals himself. He can be perceived by the senses when he reveals himself to the senses. The senses alone don't have the power to ascend to the spiritual platform, to break into the spiritual world. But Krishna has the power to reveal himself to the senses of the devotees. And then the devotees become enlivened. They become spiritually surcharged because Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. They're able to use their senses to serve the Lord of the senses. With their knowledge-gathering senses, they perceive the presence of the Lord. With their active senses, they engage in the service of the Lord. So the senses can reach the Lord when the Lord empowers the senses or discloses himself or when he reciprocates with the devotee. The curtains were closed. When the curtains were closed, you could stare as much as you want, And you wouldn't be able to see the deities. Because what can our senses, how powerful are they? A piece of cloth between us and them, and your eyes are useless. You can't see them. And even by meditation, how much would we be able to picture the Lord? But when the curtain is drawn back, then Krishna reveals himself. Yes, here I am. You can see me. You can serve me. Krishna or Krishna's devotee. Krishna doesn't personally draw the curtains, but he engages the devotee. You draw the curtains, let the devotee see me. Oh, by the grace of Krishna and Krishna's devotees, we can approach him. Otherwise not. All right, some questions, comments.